special report. Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At U.S. Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
Hi, everybody. I'm Christine Dolan, and this is our Sunday Globalist in Plain Sight show. And today we're honored to have our friend and contributor to CDM, Sasha Latipova. Hi, Sasha.
Hi, Christine.
So we are, you know, near the end stretch of the 2024 presidential campaign. Mm-hmm. And you wrote a piece recently, and we've been talking now for a couple of years about what's really behind the COVID. And a lot of people are now, they're talking about MAHA instead of MAGA, which is Make America Healthy Again. And you wrote this piece and it really goes to the heart of policy. So let's begin, first of all, let's talk about the COVID. And then we're gonna move into the policy side of making America healthy again. Where do you see, there's a lot of information that's out there. Some people have not been paying attention. Some people have periodically been paying attention to the narrative as we've found more and more information. Mm-hmm. Where do we stand right now? Because you've been enlightening everybody about the connection between the COVID shots, the bioweaponry side of it, and DOD.
Mm-hmm. Well, so as my writing and investigation revealed for the last almost 3 years, COVID was not a pandemic, and pandemics do not exist and they can't exist. And when people cite, examples of pandemics, they either refer back to like Black Plague, which I'll address later, or more recently they'll cite evidences like, oh, there were 80 cases here or, another 100 cases. And then you read in detail and those tend to be people who got vaccinated recently at some camp or something. So pandemics don't exist. COVID was a fake pandemic. And it was faked specifically with a script that the DOD advertised in the past. And they do have a script. And that involves some poisoning in some locations with a variety of things. Can be mostly it's chemicals or drugs. There's another theory that they put some sensitizing agents into previous year or previous fall flu vaccines, and that's also possible. And so there was some sort of faking occurred for the symptoms, which we know most people had very mild, but some people had a severe reaction. So to me, that says it was a sensitizing type of an agent. But those were not lethal. What the vast majority of incidents of deaths are attributed to are hospital murder protocol, which is also part of faking a pandemic. The government simultaneously gives massive incentives to the healthcare establishment to kill people with remdesivir, ventilators, starvation, dehydration. I have personal experience with it with one of the family members, and I've heard numerous stories of people corroborating this. And so that's how they fake the pandemic. So some poisoning to elicit some novel symptoms and drive panic, and then murders, and then fraud on death certificates where they categorized, car accidents and as COVID and things like that.
Let me jump in here. So when we talk about the pandemic, okay, do you I always look at it in terms of when I take a look at corruption as an investigative journalist, I take a look at, you know, what's the business model? What are the tools by which, what are the criminal tools to carry out the criminal enterprise? Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about the gain of function? Because if we didn't have the gain of function and people going into the bat caves and people collecting the coronaviruses and taking them to the laboratories and mixing them in petri dishes with the humanized mice, there wouldn't be a database for coronaviruses that are transmissible to human beings. Well, and I know that that's the basic business model. That's the underlying belly of the beast. To create the mandated seasonal coronaviruses. We know since September of 2021, through documentation from the Biden-Harris White House, that their policy from science and technology is to have seasonal mandated coronaviruses. So we can talk about the fraud, and there's tons of fraud. It's endless in terms of the hospital protocols rolling out the CR, those tests. What is the name of those tests they gave people?
The PCR.
Yeah,
or lateral flow. Yeah,
right. And those were false negative.
They're completely false. Yeah, right. those tests are fraudulent, completely false.
So do you think that we need to go beyond what, because gain of function comes under DOD in some form or fashion, okay?
So let me address that. Gain of function is also part of the faking. Gain of function doesn't produce anything other than you can make some poison, yes. Mm-hmm. And they've done it for quite a while. Fort Detrick is the oldest operating bioweapons lab in the world, continuously operating since 1943. They officially said that they, you know, signed on to the bioweapons convention, but they never stopped their activities. In fact, they increased funding, and these activities got renamed into biomedical research and moved not only in Fort Detrick, but all over. Every major and minor academic center in the US has a bioweapons development lab and participates in gain of function, and they don't officially call it that, but there's a wide variety of activities that can be categorized as attempting gain of function and attempting bioweapons. At the minimum, any academic center that has vaccine development is participating in bioweapons research. Now, to address the fears of gain of function, it does not produce viruses. It does not produce simultaneously transmissible and lethal viruses that can transmit from human to human and go around the world and cause a pandemic. That they don't do. They can string together molecules, large molecules. They're called, you know, macromolecules or all these proteins and RNA and DNA strings. Yes, you can synthesize them in the lab. You can also model them on a computer. And I give analogy to people to understand how this works. It's, for example, the coronavirus that they postulate only exists in the computer. Nobody has ever seen it in the wild. Nobody has ever found it in any sample. Nobody has ever isolated it fully and demonstrated that, yes, here, I have this virus. Now, what everybody points to, and all the tests are designed sort of, that's what they claim, is to identify the toxic part, postulated toxic part of the coronavirus, which is spike protein. So spike protein has been found, including in the vials of these mRNA vaccines. Now, so the spike protein to the virus is like a tooth to the shark. So, you know, the shark has certain types of teeth, and I can, you know, catch some sharks and figure out they have teeth, and that's the toxic part. And so I can now make separately different kinds of teeth. Now design all sorts of different kinds of teeth, like bigger, smaller, longer, double-edged, triple-edged, whatever. Those are weapons. And I can throw them around my environment. And then I can say, see, I have this mega dragon shark, a chimeric one. I made it in the lab. And, you know, it's super dangerous, and I can unleash it on you, and you should do what I say. That's the business model behind all of this. But it depends on a lot of faking. Like, I have to convince you by showing you these pieces that I do have that shark, and I didn't just make those pieces. And, of course, you know, people who are in that business, they understand that part. And so they know it's all faking. Who doesn't understand is the public. So to the public, they sell this idiotic stories about rogue scientists in the lab cooking up some scary viruses and then releasing them on the world. You know, so and that's how a pandemic preparedness racket, which is a huge government enterprise, international enterprise, involving militaries of NATO, is funded, and how they're working is by convincing everybody that, okay, well, we lied about pangolin and wet market in Wuhan, but you know what? That's because for strategic reasons, for national security, because these bad people over there in Iran or wherever the finger is pointed, China, Ukraine, well, they're making scary bioweapons viruses, by the way, in labs that CDC controls. CDC controls Ukrainian biolabs since 2005. But it's bad Ukraine that makes the viruses. Same for Wuhan. They you know, NIH gave them money, but oh my God, it's China attacked us. So those are the stories that are told to the public so that the public, first of all, buys into all this BS and funds the pandemic preparedness enterprise to the trillions of dollars that they consume. And then when they decide to declare a pandemic, then everybody runs and implements all those tyrannical and absolutely idiotic protocols that they force everyone in, and then everybody runs and injects themselves with poison.
Okay, so let's break this down, because the truth is that the narrative on the other side, the people that are in this business of gain of function, the people that ran the PREDICT project at USAID, mm-hmm. there is an international consortium of mm-hmm. scientists who claim to be mm-hmm. like the Batwoman looking for coronaviruses. There is a database of over 1,200 quote unquote coronaviruses mm-hmm. that are supposedly, they say, transmissible. There are the Peter Daszaks of the world, who was with the Eco Health Alliance, who has now been basically shut down from getting any US federal funds for any of the quote unquote gain of function work he was working mm-hmm. on. But he just recently got a $3 million grant of some sort. And I don't exactly know where he got, who gave it to him. But now it's connected to Georgetown University Medical Center. So even you can say that it's fake, but there is such a thing as a bioweapon world. Okay.
I understand. The U.S. government funds a lot of fakery, a lot. Like, just because something is written in a patent somewhere or written in the scientific literature and they're saying, oh, you know, we made this bioweapons virus. I also published on those peer-reviewed publications and the huge, you know, medical declarations that we've made a transmissible lethal virus in the lab. And later on, they turn out to be fake. So this happens over and over and over again.
So is this just shallow human beings who are just wacko?
No. They're not shallow
people. What is their end goal here, Sasha? If it's all fake, if you're saying a pandemic doesn't work and the coronaviruses are not transmissible, what is the truth?
It's not, and I'm not saying coronavirus is not transmissible. There's very good evidence they don't exist at all. If they exist, they may be transmissible. The 1,200 may be transmissible. They just don't cause anything. They're benign. What people are claiming, so hold on. So the confusion is not whether I can make a virus in the lab. Technically, I can. Technically, there are instructions. Technically, I can synthesize a large molecule and call it a virus and say, oh, I made it in the lab. So that part you can do. The part that you cannot do, and everybody is believing that it's possible purely by metaphors, is making that virus, first of all, live replicating by itself and make it transmissible between people easily and simultaneously very deadly. Okay? So that part nobody can make. And if something is mild, it can be transmissible. If it's mild, what are we concerned about? Sniffles? You know, so it's not a pandemic. Like, okay, it's a pandemic of sniffles.
So what was it? Okay, so then it comes down to this. What was the purpose of this?
As I said, so Ralph Baric, in his several papers and in a book where he and then National Academy of Sciences of the U.S., explains how it is not possible to make lethal transmissible viruses, exactly what I just told you. They explained in the whole book, and numerous academic centers of the U.S. signed on to it and said, yes, it's true, we cannot make these things. He also said that in his 50-page paper, explaining the same reasons why you can't make it, and said, and the best use for it in his conclusions is to force governments to act on pre-programmed activities, pre-planned activities, which is what they did. So using the entity of excitement, as Rick Bright and Fauci said in October 2019, we need to force universal vaccination. And the way to force universal vaccination is you need to force all the governments to act simultaneously along the same lines. They've practiced these events 201. There were also secret events, Pacific Dawn, for example. So 201 was publicized, Pacific Dawn wasn't, but they were doing exactly the same thing, practicing this coronavirus scenario, how to, like, putting all these protocols in place so that they will then just do what whoever central command is tells them to. And that's what they did.
So, all right. But again, it goes back to the question of, is this just for the purpose of vaccination and vaccination business and enriching pharmaceutical manufacturers who have no liability?
It's not just enriching pharmaceutical companies. So vaccination for 200 years, vaccination has been systematic poisoning program, started in Britain and then was run in the U.S. legally So my friend Catherine Watt has traced all the law related to vaccinations in the U.S. going to 1700s. Mm-hmm. And it's very clear that it was from the start systematic eugenics-driven systematic poisoning and population control program, originally designed to keep the numbers of the poor people in check because, as eugenics wrote, they tend to reproduce too much and they're dirty and they're the spreaders of the disease. So for that reason, we need the vaccination programs and also Planned Parenthood at the same time. Now all of this is extended on all of us. The reason they know that they're poisoning people and they know exactly how they're poisoning people by vaccination is because I also wrote about this. Is because in 1913, a Nobel Prize was given to this person, Charles Richer, for work on anaphylaxis that demonstrated very clearly, although he didn't say that, he was a eugenicist, but it demonstrated very clearly that it's not possible to vaccinate. It's impossibility. Humans cannot be vaccinated.
But we have a vaccination schedule for
children. Right, which is poisoning schedule. So all you can do.
So you're basically, yeah, I mean, they're creating something, they call it a vaccination, but you're saying that actually that those shots that they require for children are just poison shots?
They're just poison shots because as Charles Richer has demonstrated, first of all, they measure protection by a surrogate marker, which is antibodies, which is ridiculous. The scientists who understand this, they know that antibodies do not equate to immunity.
All right. So my question goes, because, you know, it's not that I don't believe you, okay, mm-hmm. because you've got the expertise on this. But it seems to me that the people that are involved in this are out of their minds.
Oh, yes, they are. And look, I don't live in their heads. I'm just telling you if you look into the evidence, like we have looked into the evidence, going back to the 1700s in the law, going back in the science, like I'm going to cover Richer a little bit. If you look at this and you're like, it wasn't my profession, although I had relevant knowledge to look into this side of the profession, and I'm horrified. Like I was horrified from the start, and it got even worse. By now, it got even worse because And nobody who reads Reshape professionally or all related work on anaphylaxis and allergies and how it's unpredictable, it's still unpredictable, can in their right mind say, oh, and now let's go and inject every healthy child on the first day of birth twice. Mm-hmm. Because Hep B gotta be given to them on the first day of birth, because this is a disease that affects the intravenous drug users.
So, right? So I have a question for you, okay, because you're first generation immigrant here in the United States. You're from, mm-hmm, Ukraine. Mm-hmm. In Ukraine, do they have the childhood vaccination schedules?
Now they do. Now they follow the same as, because they're vassal of the U.S. So now they do, and now all the kids are diseased, obese. When I was growing up, vaccination schedule was maybe 3 or 4 vaccines, and not on the first day of birth, and no vitamin K shots, and none of this nonsense. Okay, and I'm against all vaccines. Those were also bad. But we had no obesity in children, with no diabetes, no asthma. I didn't know food allergies existed. I didn't know autism existed until I got to the U.S. Until I got to the U.S. and I saw the Rain Man movie, and I was like, what is this? What does he have? Mm-hmm. You know, I've never seen anything like we didn't. Childhood cancer does not exist except for vaccines. Childhood cancer is not the same. If you look at the fully unvaccinated people, never vaccinated, cancer doesn't exist either. Mm-hmm. All of this. So, and again, coming back to this, what we found with Richey's work, the reason it's not possible to vaccinate, you're only poisoning people, and you're poisoning them in a very devious Russian roulette kind of a manner. Because injection of foreign proteins, as he demonstrated, creates the state of anaphylaxis. And most healthcare professionals, including myself, were under impression by now, because again, this is all a systematic way of gaslighting and hiding this stuff. By now, everybody thinks that anaphylaxis is only a very severe reaction where somebody drops down because their blood pressure just dropped immediately. And, you know, it requires EpiPen to recover, you know, stuff like that. Now, Richey's original work, for which he received the Nobel Prize, said that it's not just that. It's anything from mild allergy, mild rash, to dropping dead is all anaphylaxis. And the reason anaphylaxis state develops is if we have injection directly into the bloodstream of a foreign protein. Protein is a large molecule. Small drugs, which you get in pills, are less than 900 kilodaltons. Large molecules, such as DNA, RNA, proteins, they are thousands of daltons.
And so let me ask you something. If because you've been a consultant and you've been in the business, mm-hmm, for decades, all right? You've consulted with about 60 companies, okay? Mm-hmm. Pharma companies. Mm-hmm. What's your reaction now? I mean, you were part of the business.
I never worked in vaccines. It's a completely different business.
Okay, do you now mm-hmm, have a different feeling just about the pharma industry completely?
Because
of this whole COVID vaccination experience in the last
few years. I now understand a lot more things about the industry. Not I wasn't in love with the industry, but I was, as I said, I worked on drug side of it, which is heavily regulated. And while, you know, there are a lot of things that I saw as, you know, forms of corruption, I could never in my mind, I could envision that this was the state of affairs on the vaccine side. Okay. And on the vaccine side, which is always a different campus in a different state, so that we can never be in touch with each other. And we from drug side can never go and look over their shoulder and say, oh my God, like they don't regulate you at all, which is what we have discovered with Catherine. Vaccines are not regulated at all. They're fake regulated. Okay.
So as a result of the 1986 act that President Reagan signed, they no longer have any liability.
Well, starting there, the reason that act went in place is because up until 1973, they were not regulated at all. They were not even under FDA mandate. They were just cooked up by CDC these poisons. And that's what I'm saying. It's all intentional. And it's going on since like 200 years ago. CDC, a private corporation, was cooking them up, forcing them on everyone, and privatizing the returns. Now, in 73, they came under FDA regulation mandate. And in about, you know, 5 years, like, I don't know how long it takes to put a new law in place. But let's say in about 5 years, they realized, you know, if we have to, like, comply with these things, it's not going to work. So they introduced this law, right, to protect themselves from liability. Once you're protected from any liability, it's as if regulations don't exist for you because you don't have liability. And then proceeded to like systematically remove requirements that exist on the drug side for the vaccine side. So nobody actually tests them for anything. There is we uncovered an office on the FDA webpage. It says that it's headed by Dr. Andrew Lewis, who is by our estimate, at least 90 years old, if he's alive, but he's the head of this office, fake head. The office, when you read the description of what they do, they found that even one nanogram of DNA in a vaccine can cause cancer. What is the FDA regulatory limit? 10 nanograms. So FDA says it's okay for you to have 10 times more material injected that we know causes cancer because reasons. Now, what in fact found in COVID vaccines by Kevin McKernan and his colleagues is up to 200 or 2000 nanograms rather. So 200 times over the regulatory limit is being injected in Pfizer jabs and has been for years now. And all the regulators actually know about this because everybody has been notified. The Epoch Times interviewed them even. They all said, yes, we know. And it's not a problem. Continue injecting. So
It's pretty scary.
You tell me this is not intentional.
Well, right? It's almost like it's too big to bust because what they need is to have some prosecutors.
That's what they rely on. And every normal person listening to me and saying, I know, lady, what you're saying. I know you're not crazy, but it's not possible. I can't imagine the evil this big. Okay. And that's a normal reaction.
So we're going to go to a commercial break. And on the other side of this, Sasha, I want your thoughts about how to make America healthy again, because get into the policy right now and the discrepancies between everybody's voices that are out there.
A large retail store just canceled a huge order, leaving us with a ton of extra MyPillows. But you know what? That's their loss. I'm going to make it your gain. For the first time ever, you get standard classic MyPillows for wholesale prices, only $14.88. I can't believe I'm even saying that, only $14.88. But it gets even better. For a limited time, I'm going to offer my entire classic collection at wholesale prices. Upgrade to a queen-size MyPillow for just $18.88. King size, only a dollar more. Get my body pillows for $29.88 and multi-use MyPillows for only $9.88. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on the screen. Use your promo code to take advantage of wholesale pricing for the first time ever on TV, including my standard-size MyPillow, only $14.88. They've never been offered this low before. We have limited quantities at this price, so limit's going to be 10, and once they're gone, they're gone.
Psst. Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs, actually. And keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Ira Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. and we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and ERA. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio, because you really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
Okay, we're back with Sasha Latapova. Sasha, when you hear Make America Great Again, what do you think should be the topics at the table to shift the paradigm on getting people? I mean, there are 75% of Americans are on pharmaceuticals, okay? Mm-hmm. So we have a very pill-oriented society here. We also have 75 to 80 million of the 330 million Americans who were born after 1990. So they don't know the world, you know, before the internet, all right? And this was this level of corruption, and I say this as somebody whose family has been here for a long time, this level of corruption I have never even seen as a political journalist, okay? I mean, this is heavy, heavy duty. It's hard for people to believe that people are out there and they want to kill other people, okay, in quote-unquote Western civilization outside of a war zone. But this is a war zone, obviously. Mm-hmm. So what would you put on the table in terms of the priorities for changing the policy?
Right, for the health policy. So now there's obviously election year, we have the slogans start flying around like, oh, we have chronic disease epidemic, which is true. It's especially scary when you look at the childhood data. So we have, for example, the rate of autism was originally, before it was discovered, it was 1 in 10,000, which is nothing. By now, with the introduction of over 70 vaccines by age of 18 on the CDC schedule, the rate of autism in general in the US is 1 in 36. In California, which is the most vaccine fascist state, denies all exemptions and delicenses doctors for providing medical exemptions, the rate is 1 in 22. But even that number is kind of obscured by the fact when they measure somewhere in when the kids are 10, 12. Somebody actually traced it to what is current data for small children when autism is diagnosed. And it's something like 1 in 8.
And it's even worse if you get into the Black community here in the United States.
Yeah, certain communities is even worse because, and my personal conclusion is they're targeted, as I said, by eugenicists. They target the poor absolutely for a variety of reasons, not only because they want to control their population, but also because, for example, if somebody is injured in a poor community, they don't have the means to fight. It makes them an easier target. So the autism is on the children's side. The obesity, childhood obesity is horrifying. I sometimes, you know, I drive by, and it's not just in the sort of poor neighborhoods or food deserts in the inner cities. I drive through pretty tony neighborhoods, and majority of kids are overweight, at least overweight. Majority. There's maybe like a handful of kids who are normal weight. Everyone you look at playing in the field. And so that's scary. Why is this happening? And so then the obesity, of course, drives all kinds of other. It's a metabolic syndrome, drives all kinds of other diseases. There is also childhood cancers, skyrocketing. Every child is allergic to something. Food allergies out of control, peanut allergies, soy corn, gluten allergies. I have several family members with gluten allergies. So those didn't used to exist also before the vaccination schedule. And again, all of these things I just described, these are forms of anaphylaxis described by Richie. And he found that injecting food proteins. So he started working with poisons and toxins from plants, but quickly discovered that the same exact effect can be set off by benign food proteins, such as milk, such as albumins. Albumins are derived from wheat, corn, soy. And since then, he started just experimenting with food proteins because those are easy to obtain, don't need to collect some poison. So he has demonstrated that if you inject somebody with a food protein into their bloodstream, you are not in 100% of the time, but some percent of the population creates this anaphylactic state where you are now at the second injection of the same protein, or even being exposed by eating that protein, you will set off this allergy or all the way to a severe anaphylaxis. So we can see this with peanut allergies, which started, and even New York Times wrote about it. They are definitively tied to Merck vaccine when they started using them in vaccine, and they've been using them since. And
at the table, if you were asked to come in on a transition team to discuss how to make America's kids healthy again, okay?
Number one, stop vaccinations, or not, basically make them voluntary at this point. I know you can't just like go and ban because a whole bunch of people are going to get upset. But I'm telling you, the number one thing is to make them voluntary and then collect the data a few years after. Because even when people stopped going to pediatricians in the early, pandemic lockdown year, like in 2020, a whole bunch of people, the offices were closed, they were doing telemedicine, they stopped bringing kids for well visits, autism went down measurably. Okay, so you can, in a very short term, collect the data on what happens if we make vaccinations voluntary, and you will see, and I'm willing to bet money, autism will go down, childhood cancer will go down, food allergies will go down, metabolic dysfunction will go down, and that addresses like 80% of the chronic disease epidemic already.
So the pushback of the argument at the time will be, well, if we do that, then there'll be an outbreak of measles, or there'll be an outbreak of mumps.
And there won't be. It's because there wasn't, again, like when that test run was run during COVID pandemic, even flu disappeared, right? So there was no uptick of anything. It was just downtick of SIDS.
What would be the second priority that you would have?
So that's the number one priority. But so secondarily from there, you can start going into, okay, well, glyphosate. So like we should see, is it really being used as much? Is it, and where can it be scaled down, and look at that type of a deal. So like then you look at the secondary poisoners, but the primary poison. So what I am frustrated and what I wrote my piece about is like, the oldest mongering about food, food is toxic, we need to regulate food, we need to remove 1,000 components or ingredients from the food and agriculture in the US because presumably they're banned in Europe. Now, okay, so these measures to me sound like very draconian going after agriculture, and which will absolutely increase the cost of food. But not saying, so for example, if somebody has a gluten allergy, they can't eat organic wheat either. So once somebody is anaphylactized to a protein, no matter how biodynamically it's produced, it's still poison to you.
Well, here's a thought for you. Mm-hmm. Where do you stand on the pesticides? Because the pesticide industry now is trying to get the same, the same level of immunity, all right? Mm-hmm. They have a bill. And they want to be able to use pesticides and have no liability, just like the manufacturers of vaccinations, just like the people who are in the manufacturing of medical devices, all right? Mm-hmm. It's not just vaccination manufacturers that have no liability here in the United States. It almost seems like we're legalizing danger. Mm-hmm. We're decriminalizing danger. We're giving everybody a license to kill or to harm.
Well, yes.
Where do you stand on the pesticides? Because that's related to food.
Yeah, no, of course I would not give them the same immunity. We need to nullify the immunity that pharma got, and don't give immunity to pesticides, that's for sure. And as I said, I don't want to have dangerous pesticides, but people are saying pesticides, there are, I also looked into pesticides a little bit. Related to these emergency declarations. There are 18,000 different pesticides approved in the US. Now, out of them, there are four different groups, and organophosphates and carbamates are definitely really bad pesticides. And in my opinion, shouldn't be used. And need to understand why if at all are they being used, how much are they being used.
I think some of them are actually being used in Africa.
Maybe in Africa. So I know, but we're talking U.S. domestic policy. Mm-hmm. So I would be like, okay, are they being used? Where are they being used? The other groups, like especially the last group, those are like plant oils, like peppermint oil. You know, I use those. They come in sprayers. They sell them in the hardware store. Yeah, there's just peppermint oil and lavender oil and, you know, like natural oils. They are also pesticides. So those types of things, and you can use them and your food is organic. So again, like when, you know, when people say pesticides, it's a very kind of a very broad, vague thing that everybody thinks, oh, it's super bad. But on the other hand, like if you have the ones that are, you know, organic and natural pesticides, you're increasing the food yield, which is very important. Because if you right now, next year, go and say, okay, all these like 1,000 components are now banned. What are the farmers going to do? What's the supply chain? How are they going to reconfigure? Obviously, this is going to crash the food supply.
Well, it may. We have a tendency here in the United States when we shift in our paradigms in certain industries, for instance, in the manufacturing, when, you know, because of NAFTA, when basically this went down in the 1990s, and a lot of manufacturing plants closed down here in the United States, and then they shifted overseas. We didn't have a retraining program at that point in time. That was one of the failures to, mm-hmm. because everybody, I mean, when Ross Perot ran for president in 1992, he was totally against NAFTA. He said that mm-hmm. on the debate mm-hmm. stage. And everything that he predicted actually happened, and that's why we have a discussion every 4 years about bringing jobs back to America, reopening manufacturing mm-hmm. plants. But it's kind of hard to do that when you've got globalization as the bottom line. Do you think that there should be some type of huge transparency and reform from HHS down through NIH, NIAID, and FDA and CDC?
Well, absolutely. You know, the laws that exist right now in the U.S. are atrocious, and we have identified a bunch of them that need to be nullified. So, like the public health law, this whole non-regulation of vaccines, the mandatory nature of the vaccines, which is unconstitutional because they are forcing you to inject poison into your child 70 times. Anyway, so all of that stuff needs to be restructured. You know, if in ideal world, I would just, you know, cancel, nullify those laws and severely restructure those organizations because to make them, to bring them back into compliance with the U.S. Constitution, because they are completely out of compliance. They are legalizing murder, which we've experienced, you know, in the past couple of years. They've been practicing what the law allows them to do completely legally. That's why nobody can bring them to court.
Well, it's a license to kill, but we also
that's the number one step, is to take away the license to kill from those people.
All right. So where do you agree or differ with somebody like Bobby Kennedy?
Well, unfortunately, I don't think it's Bobby Kennedy's own ideas now he's the spokesperson for the Trump campaign ideas. And it seems like he's gotten neutralized very quickly and pigeonholed into making these food commercials now on Twitter, which I've profiled.
Put the politics on the side. Let's just stick mm-hmm. to the substance of the policy. Where do you stand?
I think the policy that they're pushing, this MAHA policy, is all about blaming food and misdirecting from the real causes of chronic disease epidemic. That's why I'm so disappointed with it.
Because you really believe that it is the shots that are given to the
kids?
It's
the shots. As I said, if they anaphylactize you to gluten, soy, corn, chicken, gelatin, all kinds of milk, you are now poisoning yourself with the things that are totally benign for everybody else. And then they're saying, oh, I'm going to introduce raw milk at $12 a gallon in my local grocery store, or this designer pasta from Italy. it's going to be $20 instead of $2 for a pasta pack. And, you know, you need to eat healthier, this really good food. You still can't do it. You're still poisoned by the same.
Well, organic. when Kennedy, in all fairness, mm-hmm. I've only seen mm-hmm. one of these mm-hmm. morning talk shows where mm-hmm. the food is laid out and Bobby gets mm-hmm. into the different food. But the only one that I watched was when Kennedy was talking about, you know, what. And I just remember strawberries, okay, because mm-hmm. he was talking about that there are some strawberries that they call organic, but there's some pesticides that they actually use on them. So I'm not an expert in pesticides. Mm-hmm. I'm not an expert in the foods. Mm-hmm. You know, I just don't eat processed foods. But what is, it's the policies.
It's the policies.
Is your whole crux of your position right now for making America healthy again? Is it that you need to just stop the vaccinations and nature will take care of itself?
Number one, yes. So this the problem will be addressed in at least by 50%, which is a huge chunk. That's my low end estimate. If you stop the vaccination, you will address at least 50% of this. And you have to do it first, because if you're only looking at the food, first of all, you are brainwashing.
I don't think he's only looking at the food.
There's no talk about vaccines. Nicole Shanahan had this little video with like 1 second of vaccination shown, literally 1 second. And that got scrubbed from the internet. I don't know why. Don't ask me.
Interesting.
But they're full force into, everybody needs to eat healthy, including, again, regulating the size of the soda purchases for the welfare recipients. Yeah, that's extremely critical piece of anyway, so I've reviewed all of their bullet points. They're all about food, all about blaming food and agriculture.
Right,
so
you would repeal the 1986 Act, right?
Absolutely repeal PrEP Act.
You would say, you know, let's get rid of the vaccinations, all right? What about the advertisements of pharmaceuticals on television?
I would also not want to have them on TV.
Where would you stand in terms of the advertisements on the internet for pharma prescriptions? I mean, keep this in mind. We were the only country in the world when I was working at the networks, okay, mm-hmm. that put on pharmaceutical advertisements.
No, I know it's
on television. Then New Zealand tried mm-hmm. it for a while. I think that they took it off. So, but at the same time, when the internet was created and became sort of this household appliance mm-hmm. over 20 years ago, that became the Wild West for advertisements on the internet as well. Senator Ron Johnson has got a bill that he's pushing to take the ads off of TV. And I suggested to him, that's not good enough. You need to take them off the internet, because we have 75. We are the most, the United States is the most pharmaceutically addictive country in the world.
Yeah.
A pill is an answer for everything. It's like we create all this nonsense. Take a pill for this. Take a pill for that. Take a shot for this. Mm-hmm. But it's a circle that doesn't get people healthy. So where do you stand on taking the ads off the internet?
Well, so like things.
No, Sasha, answer that question.
Well,
I'm
answering your question. So the company can have a website, their own website, and advertise on their own website their own products. I think that's fine. Now, if it's sponsorship of what's considered news, like TV originally, or now news on the internet, and buying ads on popular shows and stuff like that in movies, that I would have a big problem with. But you know, on the other hand, you can't just say, okay, well, we have to discriminate this business from doing what other normal business practices. I don't want the government in the private sector doing that either.
So why would you agree to take the pharmaceutical ads off TV?
Because they're putting them in the news. So they're advertising.
They do it not just in the news.
No,
okay?
But I mean they control the news channels that way. So
well, Sasha, I'm an experienced person in terms of the news, okay? And mm-hmm. I can tell you that there are some places where they do put ads and they do not have influence editorially. In some places they do. So to generalize that, I'm just going to push back a little bit on that, because not everybody that's working for legacy media is totally bought. Okay, the editors maybe they may feel some pressure down.
Well, so if the editor is bought,
but not everybody. Now I have been out there and I have said that the guy who was brought in, the Brit who's now head of CNN, okay, one of my alma maters, his father-in-law discovered the Hep B virus and created the first Hep B vaccination. So it was no surprise to me that Bobby Kennedy was not going to be on that presidential stage debate CNN did it. All right. So I'm willing to go out there and say, okay, fine. There's some circumstances where I know it, but the blanket side of this, I mean, I think that if you do not allow pharmaceutical advertisements on television, you need to take it off the internet as well. Well, I don't think they should have a platform.
Well, I mean,
I don't think they should have a platform. Why? They don't have a platform in any other country on earth, except for the United States on television.
No, they advertise on the web all over the
world.
That's
right. And I think that is part of the reason why people.
I think it's not appropriate, because there are some drugs that are useful. There are some, and you know, you want to have the healthy industry. You don't want to. I can't say that the entire pharmaceutical industry consists only of poison. No, I'm actually pointing finger at specific sector of presumably it, but it's a government industry, vaccination, because CDC is a private corporation and privatizes billions of dollars in vaccine sales primarily. And then downstream from there, they create the epidemic of illness that then benefits the entire healthcare sector.
How much money does CDC make from vaccinations?
$4 to $6 billion
a year.
Yeah, it's a large corporation, and they're all privatized returns from taxpayer dollars, from forcing our children to be poisoned. So why are we pointing finger at big bad pharma? They're the biggest, baddest pharma out there. They're comparable in size to Pfizer,
is the CDC financially connected to the other CDCs in other countries? Is it one? Is the CDC here the parent company, and the other ones in other countries?
I don't know. Maybe I haven't looked into that. But in the U.S., it's a huge corporation, private corporation that does this.
Do you think the CDC should be revamped?
Oh, it should be completely revamped. They should be. You know, their technical mandate is collection of data and dissemination of accurate data. Well, go back, do that. Stop this nonsense with poisoning of people. And not only they don't collect, they manipulate data and lie about it, like VAERS and other.
So does the FDA, though.
And so is the FDA. So I would focus reform on that instead of punishing entire pharmaceutical industry, which, you know, is by government is prevented from working on proper medicines. Because what does the government do? Now the government through BARDA and military funds over 50% of pharmaceutical R&D for these countermeasures that have no liability for essentially poisoning and murdering systems. So you're diverting all this investment from properly allocated private sector, which allocates into like R&D, risky R&D, and, you know, figuring out like how to make new drugs. Now you are diverting them all into this military activity. And of course, because it comes with no liability, they all run for it.
So then that brings up another question. What do you do about the bioweapon industry that DOD is involved in?
Defunded. Just defund their nonsense. Like all of these pandemic preparedness racket exercises, that funding has to go. Countermeasures has to nullify that, and it will go away, because they're only doing it because the law allows them to do it.
All right. So my last question has to do with the labs. Okay. There are about 60 level 4 labs akin to Wuhan in the world. 25% of them are in the United States.
Yep.
42% of them are in Europe. 4% of them are in Australia. None of them are in New Zealand. And the rest of them are sort of in Asia. Mm-hmm. So what would you do about those labs?
just don't fund them.
So you're saying shut those down too?
Shut them down. Yeah, shut them down.
So you're basically saying shut down whatever this is called, gain of function, but whatever it really is. Shut the whole thing down.
Yeah.
First of all, it's not regulated. So if they don't shut it down, should there be a regulation? Because it seems to me that it's more dangerous than nuclear, which at least has some regulation.
It's not more dangerous than nuclear. So one thing to do is ignore them and don't fund them. Now, there's this whole other bill or whatever Rand Paul was proposing. I also wrote about it. So he's like, oh, we need a new regulatory body to regulate these bioweapons research. Because the problem is, like, you collected the information about these BSL-4 labs, then there are BSL-3 labs, and there's, like, thousands of BSL-whatever labs. Now, all of this is, you know, they're working with what's called select agents, and all of this is categorized as infectious disease research. So,
or zoonotic. I mean, a lot. If you have a lab, for instance, there's a lab that's connected. I forget the name of it. Mountain something or other. It's in Montana, And the face of it has to do with sort of animal research. Okay, So it's almost like, you know, this is a veterinarian, but really it's not. It's connected to
A lot of it is veterinarians, you know, working with animals, trying to make these, you know, lethal transmissible viruses and vaccines, including J.D. Vance's company I wrote about. Does the same thing in Ohio. So these activities, they're legal because they claim in their paperwork that this is infectious disease research. So, and that's a loophole from a bioweapons convention. So you have a couple of choices. You can defund these projects in general or close the loopholes somehow and say, no, you can't do this because it's a bioweapon. You can't work with select agents, so which will address it also. And, you know, defund purchasing of these vaccines by the U.S. government. So defund the BARDA, absolutely. Defund, you know, buying these countermeasures. Like just now, a few days ago, they gave another $400 million contract to Emergent BioSolutions to produce this smallpox vaccine, which is an atrocity. It's hugely toxic. But the government just gave them $400 million and no liability because those contracts involve known liability and PREP Act protection. So defund that, and you will see that this activity in these biolabs will dramatically diminish, and they will lose interest in those things because it all comes from money and promises of various military contracts and no liability.
What a world we live in. Sasha Ladapova, thank you. How do people get in touch with you? How do they follow you? What's your Substack?
So my Substack is Due Diligence and Art, or you can just search for my name on Substack. And I published close to 400 essays now.
You have. And you're selling some beautiful art. Because yeah. You're also great artist. Yes. So
they're unrelated. They're not.
Political. They're not related, but they are beautiful. That keeps you sane as you do.
It keeps me sane. Yes.
Sasha, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. You're a wealth of information. Thank you.
Thank you.